I also don't know what it means. I can't really describe it, but it is more alive, or people are like open or something. I don't know. But it's affected me. I've been aware of it. And so I thought, well, maybe this is a good time to wonder more deeply about what does it mean to participate in Sangha life as the crucible for transformation. This is how we become bodhisattvas, caring for the world. So Sangha means community, but it's a different kind of community. I like what Taigan Dan Leighton says. He says, our effort is practiced together in the midst of something much bigger. A great force, energy arises, not ours. We tap into it. Let it carry you. Immediately entering this meditation hall, our temple, even immediately walking through the door into the vestibule, we're already here for more than ourselves. I care. This sacred space is where something bigger is moving through us and between us, all of us. And it's happening right now. Welcome. Our presence and practice together offers something beyond which we can know. Suzuki says, just sitting means to be ourselves, but we can't be ourselves alone. The entire universe works thoroughly through each person in the practice of just sitting. We practice with all beings, interbeing. And then Dogen says, to learn Buddhism means to learn the self, but it's very difficult to learn the self without relating with other people. Without doing anything with people, it's very difficult to learn who we are. In order to learn who we are, we have to do something with people, particularly to help people. This is really a good practice for us, to know who you are, to know yourself, whatever, whatever. So, our practice is not just for ourselves, it's for each other. Each of our presences matters each time we come together. Each time, like tonight, each of your presences matters to all of us. My sincere Zazen touches your sincere Zazen. Your sincere Zazen touches me, and back and forth it goes. Together we awaken to what starts to emerge within us. I mean, at the same time, of course, we come here in our utter humanness. Some of us may feel depressed. Some of us have just experienced a loss. A Dharma sister in our women's group just died last night. Maybe we're feeling joy at the possibility, Robin, Frank. Maybe we're feeling joy just because coming here is offering us a different way of life. Maybe we come seeking refuge from the scary, chaotic, and violent times. Maybe we're just curious, seeking a larger meaning in life. But already, we are so much more than we think we are. We are so much more than the ideas that are there as to why we've come. Everyone is welcome here, just as you are. And Suzuki says, in our practice, we have no particular purpose or goal. So long as you have a particular goal in your practice, that practice will not help you completely. Just sit, not trying to get anywhere, not trying to improve ourselves, even though, of course, we keep trying to improve ourselves. It can include wishing we were different, but we're here not trying to get anywhere. And together, we're sitting with all beings. We're resting in the source of life, in the truth of the interconnectedness of all beings. And at this point, our lives are not our own anymore. We're already called beyond ourselves, stepping into Sangha life. As we step across this threshold, coming in the door, in the meditation hall, we step into a space that creates openness, even vulnerability. We receive offerings of wisdom and compassion in this vulnerability we come in with. So the first thing I want to say is our presence matters. Each of our unique presences offers something beyond what we can name, but at least our presence offers courage for us to make this effort to sit and practice, to cultivate our capacity to live from our higher selves, because this practice isn't easy. It requires consistency, ability to tolerate what's uncomfortable, to listen in the dark, to wait for the arising of wisdom. Courage. Reb Anderson says, we need help to be intimate with ourselves. So I just want to ask, when you sit, are you aware of the person sitting next to you on either side? Are you aware of the person across the aisle, sitting over there on the other side of the altar? Just, we can pause and take their energy in. It's almost like offering an inner bow to each other. Recently, I was on retreat, and we were having our lunch, and someone chose to sit at another table in solitude. Then later, that person came and sat at the table and sat next to me. I was surprised to feel such warmth and gratitude arising in me just to be in his presence. I was shocked by how much this embodied closeness affected me. I felt happy and comforted by this person's presence so close while sharing a meal. And then I was remembering a story that I read about Suzuki, and I'm hoping you know he's one of the main Japanese Buddhist priests that brought Soto Zen to America. And, he developed an illness. He was very, very sick. And he was in the hospital, but he was quarantined because no one knew what the illness was. And they were afraid, well, maybe it was contagious. So he was in isolation in this room, and people couldn't come in and be close to him. But finally he was diagnosed with cancer, and a Sangha member, this is his story, came to visit him. And Suzuki said, I'm so thankful. Now we can share meals together again. There's a kind of intimacy that we're given in this Sangha life. And then it matters. It has become kind of fascinating for me lately to become more aware of the impact of another's presence. I mean, little things. Like I was in the kitchen and I had this new bottle of olive oil and I was trying to open up the can, the top, for the first time, and I couldn't get it to budge. And my husband just came over. He came close to me, and all of a sudden, I could easily open up the bottle. I mean, this happens with strangers, too. I gave a Dharma talk over Zoom to the Sangha in Sunnyvale, Bamboo in the Wind, but there were only two people who were, I mean, I was on Zoom, but I could see that there were only two people in person in the Sangha that night. Everybody else was on Zoom. And so we came to the point where we were chanting, and all of a sudden I noticed that they had come to sit very close to each other and were sharing a chant book. I mean, they could have each had their own chant book, but something brought them together. And I just think, I don't think they knew really how this truth of interbeing, this presence of coming together, was really nurturing their lives. Their bodies naturally moved in this direction. This is sort of natural to being alive, to wanting to be connected in this way. I'm not sure who said this, but it's important, because only in consciousness do we perceive separation. Underneath is the truth of no separation. Bringing harmony to everyone is underneath. It's not something we necessarily see on a conscious level, but we realize together in this context and live the Buddha way together. So this attunement on this presence level is a kind of nonverbal interconnectedness, and it's attunement that is pulsates in our bodies and sensations and frees us up to be moved by the Buddha activity. I think I told this story once before, but one time I was at Gringold's farm and we were all outdoors and there was like this whole crowd of people, and I looked around and I didn't see anyone I knew, and I shut down inside and I felt so shy and introverted. And then all of a sudden I noticed that there was somebody else sitting over there on the sidelines. So I walked over to this person and I said, "Could I sit next to you? I'm an introvert." And they said, "Sure." And I sat down and we were sitting very close together. I mean, I think he said, "I'm an introvert too," or something like that. But we didn't talk to each other at all. We just sat there. And then I looked out and suddenly I saw somebody I knew. And I felt completely released of this tightness inside. I felt happiness and I leapt up and went over to talk to the person. So there's this way in which we can be led, I guess is what I'm trying to say, through this sort of bodily sense of being present to each other. But also, this Sangha life, remember it says, bringing harmony to everyone free from hindrance. So what's that part, free from hindrance? Because really, this Sangha life offers us opportunities to study the self. And I'll quote Dogen again, who says, "To learn Buddhism means to learn the self, but it's very difficult to learn the self without relating to people." So this practice too, the jewel of Sangha, asks us to sincerely study the self, to see our patterns, our fears, our tendencies to turn away from our suffering, to hold on to what we hold dear. But if we remain in mindful attention and begin to see our projections, to see the ways we put people into categories, the ways that then we no longer react automatically anymore. We see that this projection is a mental construction. It may be true, but maybe not. Anyway, we see someone and put them in a category of thought, we are caught in a view. So this is where I kind of learned this in a different way, and this is my story, Sarah, but you were the one that stimulated it for me when you went on your pilgrimage in Japan. And Sarah was talking about how all the pilgrims were hiking in this rugged land and it was hot and they were sweaty and it was so hard, and they showed up, I guess it was like an oasis, a watering place to get drinks and bathroom and so forth. And then this big fancy tourist truck showed up with all the tourists, you know, and they were all, you know, in an air-conditioned van, and they got out, and so here were the rugged pilgrims sweating and here were the tourists. But then I thought, well, those are categories. Those are labels, pilgrim, tourist. So we could say, well, who is the pilgrim? Who is the tourist? Maybe there are tourists who are pilgrims, and maybe there are pilgrims who are tourists. And maybe there are pilgrims who are not tourists or pilgrims, or maybe there are people who are not tourists or pilgrims. And so this is like an example of practicing with how we label, how we name, how we have projections, and that what we want to do is to move into not knowing. Because the only way we'll be able to really encounter that person getting off the bus is to meet them from a place of not knowing. And then messages from the Buddha mind can come through. So I was, when I first moved here from Illinois, I went to this retreat with Norman Fisher. And I don't know why, but we were all practicing sitting meditation in chairs. So anyway, we had a period of zazen and we took a break and I walked away and I came back and I was going to go sit down. I said, somebody's in my chair. <It's> like, I mean, you know, I thought, oh, wait a second. This isn't my chair. I thought it was my chair until something sort of told inside, this chair doesn't belong to me. This was a Sangha moment of awakening, a freeing from a hindrance, because really nothing belongs to me. Nothing belongs to you. So our conditioned consciousness is always projecting something outward. I don't think she likes me. He always interrupts me when I'm talking. Become aware of your projections and look around. Begin to see what comes up. I'm noticing my fear when I'm speaking. I wonder, what do I want to say? See what unfolds. I often turn to my teacher when I become aware of my reactivity to a person or a situation to help understand myself first. Sometimes I turn to another Sangha member in confidence with the intention of studying the self, not to get reinforcement for my reaction, even though part of me maybe would want that. But I have to confess that to really see my patterns takes time. I've had a self-defeating pattern of trying to change my brother to be a less judgmental person. Thought it was a good idea. It never works. But a while ago, I didn't realize I was doing it again until I was doing it again. I thought I had let it go. And then, oh my gosh, the unconscious goes deep. So we have to be patient with ourselves. We have to be tender with ourselves because we're human. So living in harmony with all beings doesn't mean that we conform to something we're supposed to do. It doesn't mean that we hold back from self-expression, because each of us is unique in the ways we offer something to the whole, our attunement to the whole, like a dance. But I was asked recently, is there a difference between feeling welcome and feeling like I belong? We learn to be present to our differences from equality of mind. Are there ways in which we feel we belong here? And maybe there are ways in which we feel we don't feel at home here, because to belong is complex. The need to belong is universal, but what may feel like belonging to you may not be what feels like belonging to you. So I've heard from some people of color, when they enter a sangha, mostly white people, that out of the white person's eagerness to welcome them, they become overly friendly, and the person of color feels pressure to engage. So the paradox of belonging has to do with the pull to not stand out as different from the majority. So staying hidden or silent is a kind of assurance of belonging, but not really. David White says, we can only belong in the one way we can. That's by being ourselves. So the deepest hindrance that most of us struggle with is the subtle ways we devalue ourselves, judge that we're not good enough, that we don't have what it takes to realize our true nature. So we're here together as Sangha to help each other liberate all parts of ourselves, to be intimate with ourselves, with each other. So out of all of this, I think we end up naturally caring for each other. Like Clem underwent surgery a month or so ago, and many of us really had to reach out to learn what Clem and Cherie needed. What we thought they needed wasn't necessarily what they needed, but that interaction, that conversation together, like enabled us to care for Clem and Cherie. And some of you may remember Bruce Bache, who was a long-term member of our Sangha. He had Lou Gehrig's disease, and at a certain point, he couldn't come to Sangha anymore. And so we developed these little cadres of Sangha members who would go to their house once a week and sit zazen and chant. So we're creative in how we care for each other. John Briggs was very, very seriously ill. I don't know if you remember this, Jim and Karen, but his acupuncturist recommended that he have a very strict diet, a very particular diet. So I organized this cooking school where we all came together with the acupuncturist and we all learned how to cook these certain foods for him. So, you know, it's we can be creative in how we care, how we listen to what we need from each other. So I kind of want to end with a poem by Rumi, because this whole thing about living in harmony, free from hindrance, that I think we all have resistance to look at ourselves in certain ways or to want to see certain things about ourselves. And so this poem is called Chickpea to Soup. And it goes like, I'm not reading the whole thing, but it goes like this. A chickpea leaps almost over the rim of the pot where it's being boiled. Why are you doing this to me? The cook knocks him back with the ladle. Don't you try to jump out. You think I'm torturing you, but I'm giving you flavor so you can mix with spices and rice and be the lovely vitality of a human being. Remember when you drank rain in the garden? That was for this. Grace first, sexual pleasure, then a boiling new life begins, and the friend has something good to eat. Eventually, the chickpea will say to the cook, boil me some more. Hit me with the skimming spoon. I can't do this by myself. So here we are. Can you feel the presence from each of us? This Sangha is the most precious of things. We sit zazen together. Zazen, we are one with all existence. And just our presence is profound. Our sincere study of the self cultivates our capacity to receive the awakenings offered by the Buddha mind, to care for each other, to care for the world. Really, the world is our Sangha. This is our training ground to go out into the world and bring these gifts that we've received in our Sangha life. Katagiri says, if you think you're alone trying to get across the river, you will never get across. How do we actualize the right Dharma? So we carry each other across. We harmonize our lives with the source of existence. In the simple act of sitting together, we open our hearts and minds. And Suzuki says, we receive beginner's mind. Beginner's mind means ready for anything, open to everything. So I'm just going to end with another quote from Dogen offered to me by Jim. And it says, it's very well. Each of us attains the way because of the assistance from the people in the Sangha. Although everyone is sharp-witted, we can only practice the way because of the power of the assembly. Therefore, we should unify our minds to study and investigate the way together. Remember, a jewel becomes a vessel by being polished. People become benevolent through cultivation. What jewel glitters from the outset? Who can be sharp-witted from the time they are beginners? We should polish and cultivate without fail. We should not underestimate ourselves nor slacken in our practice of the way. We cross over together. Svaha! So what I'd really like to do right now is we're kind of a large group, and yet I don't want to break up into little groups. So this is my thought, that we can all just sit for a moment and sense, okay, if I were to say something about what Sangha life means to me right now, but not have a whole long story sentence, but have maybe like three words or an image, you know, like mine might be bright eyes. So if we do it this way, then each of us can say their name, and then we'll say their name, say your name back, so that we're beginning to know each other again. And many people maybe don't know everybody here. And then you'll say your one phrase, and then we'll go to the next person. So we'll receive people's expressions, because what I've shared here is like just little pebbles in the pool. You know, when we're talking about the jewel of Sangha life, it is vast and so much more than any one of us can say. So mine are offerings, but then each of you will be making an offering too, because we learn from each other what Sangha life can become. So does this make sense? Okay. Okay, and it makes sense to everyone on Zoom? Did you hear me? Yes? Okay, great. Okay, so if we do this side first, then I'll come to Zoom, and then we'll come back to this side. And we do need a microphone, which you have.
You have a microphone, so.
Okay, you take that. Okay, so you can start, Allison, and please know that we also deeply respect noble silence. So if there is nothing worded that comes, it's your presence that matters. But it would be good if we could know your name. So if you want to practice noble silence, then just say pass after you give your name, okay? Okay.
Allison.
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 One potato in the bucket. Jody.
Jody.
Flowers.
Wow.
Michael.
Michael.
Lifting each other.
Lifting.
Charles.
Charles.
Safety and loving kindness.
Loving kindness.
Carolyn.
Carolyn.
Ability to endure.
Ability to endure. No.
Dave.
Dave.
Fellowship, support.
Okay, so we'll not say what they share, just their name, but we'll receive what they share. Okay.
Joshua.
Joshua.
Chain link.
No. Sorry. Jim.
Jim.
Barry's green chili is, or green curry is delicious.
Oscar.
Oscar.
Here we are.
Shokan.
Shokan.
Community, relationship, mirror.
Okay, so I think what I'll do is I'll call your name because it's hard to know who goes next up there, but then you can say your name. John. Oops, you're muted.
John. Pebbles in the stream.
John.
John.
And you all on Zoom, you need to unmute yourselves so that you're ready. Please. Malia. Malia.
Malia.
Malia. Malia. The smell of the earth.
Todd. Unmute.
Sorry. Todd. Oh my gosh.
What?
Oh, I thought I lost you. Rocks in a turning barrel polish each other.
Simone.
Oh. Simone.
Simone.
Lifeline.
Susan.
Susan.
Arar.
Susan.
Potatoes in a barrel, knocking the dirt off each other.
Millard.
One continuous mistake.
Millard.
Millard.
Is that Katie?
Katie.
Katie.
The sound of me and Millard laughing while muted during the study group.
Andrea.
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 Beloved practice community.
Del.
Del. Fire in the lotus.
And say that again. We overrode you.
Oh, this is Del. Fire in the lotus.
And is that Hui? You're muted, Hui.
You, right?
Huh?
Yep. Host is me.
No, it's H-U-E. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. If you could unmute. Well, Hui. Thank you for being here.
Bryant.
Bryant.
Learning how to be a stone.
Trish.
Trish.
Soft, warm neighbors.
Valerie.
Valerie.
Learning self-compassion through others. Rosie.
Rosie.
Endurance.
Sarah.
Sarah.
Ratatouille.
Ratatouille.
Karen.
Karen.
Support.
Alan.
Alan. Alan.
Grateful to be a part of this stream.
Kenny.
Kenny.
Abrasion and smiles.
Daniel.
Daniel.
Hello. Endearing annoyances, boundless intimate safety.
Thank you, everyone. Well, we have some time if there are other thoughts or questions people want to ask or express. And I also want to give my gratitude to Maria, because her report on her experience at the mega conference of all of the Soto Zen sanghas throughout the country, and I think the world, she came back with a report and what she learned, and that kind of inspired me to offer this talk. So thank you, Malia. Jody.
I have a question. So I really enjoyed your Dharma talk. Thank you very much for that. At one point, you were talking about being free from hindrance, and that seemed to be connected to not knowing.
Yes.
Can you talk more about that?
Well, I guess there's a complexity there, because there are many ways that hindrances come up in our lives. It could be a belief that we have about ourselves. It could be many patterns. But all of those include, I think, a way that we think we know about ourselves. There's the story we tell, or there's feedback we've gotten from other people. We've created a kind of structure of self. And so in order to be open to receiving something from this ground of existence, we have to enter into not knowing. We have to release all those ways that we think or behave. Behavior, too, is a kind of knowing in a way. I always do it this way, for example. But I think it's by learning about our hindrances, you know, going down into them, not just breezing over them. I mean, if we stay on the surface, we're just throwing rocks around what we already know. But if we go down deep, then that process of beginning to understand is itself a release. It's not something you do exactly, other than to trust the our practice life, because it will show you things about it. Shows us things about ourselves, and the more we allow that to happen, the deeper the pebble goes down to the ocean, and we see the depths, and then it releases. Is that?
Thank you.
Michael?
Yeah, speaking to what you were saying just about valuing the hindrances or embracing the hindrances.
Yeah.
Often can the hindrances too also be nutrients for the group if you're open to them?
Yes, yes. Say more though what you mean. What are you thinking of?
So conflicts, judgments, things that people bring with them, irritations, all those could actually, when you open up them up and really look at them,
yes,
can actually bring people to deeper understanding of each other and themselves. And
exactly. Yes, yes.
Oftentimes conflicts can actually make a group stronger if they look at them in a certain way.
Yes, if it's shared in this context of both, everyone studying ourselves. It's, you know, it's like, okay, you might be talking about a certain thing, but it will also evoke something in me that will open up a learning about myself too. And so if we stay in that kind of that back and forth, you know, these hindrances too serve as, what do you want to say, like fertilizer for all of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you had an experience like that? Or you're imagining that maybe here this could happen?
Well, yeah, I'm married.
Right.
And I teach children, and honestly, the first conflicts are the first little openings into them getting to truly know each other and realize, oh, I want something different. I see this differently than you do. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then that's how they gain perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're all friends from the get-go, I don't think they would grow as much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, right. It's really about seeing things differently than it is about I'm right and you're wrong, or you're bad and I'm good, and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
It just occurs to me that when we get used to being together like this, then when we go out in other situations, we kind of expect that the interactions we have will be like this. Uh-huh. So, you know, we are conditioned beings. You know, we are conditioned by our associations, by our friends. And so I think that's a really important thing, is that we, you know, we soften up here. And when we go out to some kind of other situations, we can bring that softness to other situations. And that's a real value I think we have here, you know, that we can extend this out. And that is our bodhisattva activity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's, it's like this is a training ground for being able to go out into the world with this kind of, as you liked, I liked your word, softness, so that we can maybe receive whatever the harshness or the edginess of someone else, we can receive that in such a way that something can open up.
Yeah, and I want to send a shout out to 7 million people who got together as a mega sangha this last weekend, and without any violence, without any noted instance of any kind of conflict, and they showed the world. They showed the world what the world is that they want to live in. They want to live in a world of frogs and T-Rexes and kindness and naked bike rides and all of this, you know, just, you know, fun, you know, or just relax, people. You know, you've got, this is who we are. We're not this other thing, this cruelty. We're not this cruelty. We're not this meanness. And I just want to give a shout out to the mega sangha that got to go out there on Saturday and express themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
Hello. Well, thank you, Doralee. And it's funny, I didn't know that this was going to be your talk tonight, but I had a very good sit tonight, and I was thinking of things that Rosie said a while back ago. I don't remember, and I was thinking of Jim's response, which was about Sangha, and I could feel the energy of the people sitting with me, the phone ringing, and I was able to accept that with tenderness.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of you know that I sat a lot with Clearwater Zendo, with my teacher, Mary Mosin, and we were a very tight group. You know, some people came and went, but for the most part, we were about six or seven really close people sitting sesshin, doing orioki, all of that stuff. And I remember joining the Sangha about 10 years ago, and some of the personalities, and just to explain what I said, and some of the things that annoyed me, Steve acting this way, Kate, you know, Mary, and after a while, you know, I just came to love these idiosyncrasies, and now the sangha is no longer there. Mm. And all I can do, and I can still do this, I can sit back and I can think about sitting at the end of a sesshin on a Saturday at 8 o'clock, and the noises, some of the sounds in the silence, whatever. I can think of the rooster in the morning, you know, all of these things, and it's no longer there, but it still is there. And that's sangha for me. You know, I can still feel the presence of John Briggs and Linda Decker. And that is, for me, infinite safety.
Beautiful. Like you're saying that this life of sangha, sharing our deepest difficulties and so forth, opens up a connectedness, you know, that goes so deep. It transcends, whether you're here together in person, it transcends life and death. Thank you. Trish.
Well, I just wanted to say I have been gone for quite a while, and so this is my first time back, and to honor Rosie and Daniel because, or Daniel, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them, because we live close, and they offered to take me, and I so appreciate it. So that is, and the song, just riding in the car together, it was just a nice, and then sitting with people I haven't met, and it just feels good. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
I feel like I belong because I'm curious. And I'm curious because my husband is my mirror. I have a relationship with him. I'm recently retired, a wee bit isolated, and so this is my opportunity for growth through you. So thank you.
Susan
online. Awesome. Oh, Susan.
And David.
You have to unmute.
So it occurs to me that outside of the cocoon, if you will, of our particular sanghas, where we receive a lot of support, there are challenges there as well, of course, but there's a huge amount of support. And without that, going into the wider world where there is so much challenge, where we see our foibles and hindrances and delusions writ large. And then we can come back to our sangha, we can come back to our practice group and feel support while we deal with the delusions and the obscurations that we've encountered when we've been out in the wider world, and we have the support when we come back and are sitting, and we know that we're not alone, and that, you know, it isn't so scary. So, you know, the challenges are great, and for those folks who don't have this kind of support, it's very hard. We're very fortunate to have this support.
Yes. Yes, there's something very deep and precious in this way that we are practicing together that really offers something that other people who aren't practicing like this are able to experience out there. Maybe we could bring some of that out there, like Jim was saying too. Yeah. Thank you. Dave?
Woody Allen once said that 90% of life is just showing up. And
I'm a very, very appreciative of everyone here who has just shown up.
Simone.
Okay, I'm unmuted. Yeah, well, I'm in the position, I'm a Sangha of one, as far as IRL, in real life. I've had health conditions and I'm still isolated, but I participate online with a number of sanghas, actually, or Buddhist groups. It's really amazing. I don't know, I just got the vision that maybe it's up to me to create a sort of universal Indra's net of sanghas through online or something, but it gave me a positive outlook on things. So I appreciate that. Yeah. Thanks.
Wow. A vision.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you.